WHYY is proudly supported by Penn Medicine. From groundbreaking discoveries to life-saving care, Penn Medicine's innovation is helping to change lives. One moment, one treatment, one patient at a time.
This is Fresh Air. Our film critic Stephen Schiff has put together his list of the best films of 1991, and we're going to talk about his choices. But Stephen thinks perhaps the most interesting thing we watched this year was Real Life.
Well, you know what the most remarkable thing about the year was? The culture wasn't taking place in the culture. It was taking place in real life. You know, the most amazing cultural events, the things that were just as amazing to us as the best books or the best movies or the best TV shows, and more so, were the Gulf War on TV, of course, the Soviet coup, the Clarence Thomas Anita Hill hearings, and the William Kennedy Smith rape trial. These things took their place in our cultural lives, not just in our sort of news life. Because we were talking about them as though they were plots, that we were talking about them as though, you know, what's going to happen next? Who are these characters? That kind of thing. And we were discussing the issues that they raise the way we discuss the issues that books and movies and TV raise. And I think that is not just an expression of this being an unusually kind of packed year news-wise. I think that this year reflected a kind of exhaustion with fiction. You know, we have more stories being told to us than any culture in history. We have more TV shows, we have more books, we have more movies. Even within the TV shows, we have commercials that tell little stories that make us cry when we reach out to touch someone or what have you. We know every narrative trick in the book. We know what's going to happen. We know who committed the murder before the murder's committed. And to see real life instead fooling us and being unpredictable and having characters who had problems we hadn't seen before, our sophistication with fiction sort of had become overwhelming. And now real life proved that there was some way in which we could become excited again by a story if the story wasn't being told to us by a storyteller.
See, my worry is that all the real events that we watch this year we'll be watching as made-for-TV movies next year.
You're absolutely right about that. I mean, these people know a good thing when they see it. And they are manufacturers, after all, the fiction makers. They are manufacturers.
Yeah, well, I don't want to see what washed-up stars they get to play Gorbachev and Yeltsin and Clarence Thomas
Joan
and Anita
Collins
Hill.
Joan Collins says Rice and Gorbachev. I can see it.
Well, Stephen, let's get to your choices for the best films of the year, and the 10 best list just expanded to 12.
Yeah, exactly.
So we should get started with them. Do you want to do them in any order?
I'll do them in alphabetical order.
Oh, so we can have a drum roll before you get to the last letters of the alphabet.
Yeah. If you wish.
Yeah.
All right. Well, so we start with B, which is Beauty and the Beast, then Black Robe, Bugsy, Europa Europa, Life is Sweet, Naked Lunch, Paris is Burning, Rush, The Silence of the Lambs, Thelma and Louise, Truly, Madly, Deeply, and The Vanishing.
Let me ask you about a couple of films that I have a feeling our listeners aren't familiar with. Let's go to Black Robe. Tell us something about the movie. I think it's mostly been playing at art houses and might not have even reached some cities that our listeners are in.
Yeah, that's right. It's Bruce Beresford's movie about early missionaries in the Canadian territories dealing with Indians who have never seen white men before. And these are Catholic missionaries. It's an amazingly powerful, bleak, beautiful, sort of awesome film. And all that despite the fact that there are no likable characters in it, the least of all the lead, Lothair Bluto, who plays a priest who's really sort of twisted and by his faith, and a very distant, repellent character. And yet what he goes through and what all the characters in this movie go through will leave you really stunned. I think it's a brilliant, underrated movie.
And The Vanishing?
The Vanishing opened very early in 91, maybe January or February. It's a Dutch film by a man named George Sleiser, and it's a real thriller, a real kind of a murder thriller, almost perfectly made. A very small movie, as most of these on my list are. I think you'll agree they're mostly small gems. This is almost perfectly executed thriller, and I hope it comes back or can be found on video.
I can't wait to see Naked Lunch. This is the David Cronenberg adaptation of William Burroughs' work. It's on your list, so you must think it's very good.
Oh, I think it's very good. I think, you know, it's one of the most unlikely triumphs of the year. It's you know, an impossible project, this sprawling, crazy book by William Burroughs. how do you do it? How do you take these visions that don't make any sense and turn them into a narrative? The obvious way would be to use William Burroughs' life as your narrative and integrate them. But the way David Cronenberg does this is so kind of seamless and light and fast and funny and strange. It's a perfect melding of these two peculiar sensibilities, Cronenberg's and Burroughs, and absolutely faithful to both.
Yeah, I'll remind our listeners that David Cronenberg also directed Dead Ringers and Scanners.
So, and The Fly.
And The Fly, yeah. So he's got a really interesting sensibility.
Yeah, really creepy. This is, of course, a movie, as they say, not for the squeamish. It has bodily fluids and monsters and all done on a very sort of high intellectual level, strangely enough. I mean, which is where Cronenberg works. He makes sort of horror movies for the thinking man and woman.
Well, I'll be there. I've got to ask you about Thelma and Louise, Stephen. I've been meaning to talk to you about this movie. I hated this movie. And I thought, you know, everybody was trumpeting it as being this really feminist film. And I thought it's such phony Hollywood feminism. I mean, the message is if you have a husband who behaves more like your warden than your mate, and he's stupid and unattractive to boot, then it would be liberating to leave. Are we that backwards that in 1991 we applaud that message as a serious feminist statement?
No, that's certainly not the reason why I applaud Thelma and Louise. I rarely applaud or decry a film based on its message. Messages are what the movies give us on the most simplistic level.
Well, touche. I'll mention then that it was boring and it was an action film that lacked action.
I didn't think it was an action film. It was a road movie, and you won't say it lacked road. And I think it was not boring. I thought the vision that it created of a universe run by men, politics aside, feminism aside, was beautiful and convincing, brought to amazing life by the cinematographer Adrian Biddle, who showed that a kind of there's almost a masculinist viewpoint that could be taken, because he shows the unity of the landscape that men have made their own of oil derricks and trucks and roads to nowhere, the unity of that landscape with the natural kind of physiognomy of the earth, with Monument Valley cliffs and faceless deserts and everything else. I thought it was really a picture of these two women kind of alone on the face of a bewildering planet, and that's what was powerful about it to me.
Fresh Air film critic Stephen Schiff is with us. More after this short break. This is Fresh Air. We're reviewing the year in film with Fresh Air film critic Stephen Schiff. Silence of the Lambs. This is a movie that came out early in the year. A lot of people forget those early movies by the time they're making up their 10 best list. What's the lasting impact the film had on you?
Well, I thought it was a beautiful movie, and people were sort of scared by it and scared to go see it, and I think found themselves coming out of it not only having had a great entertaining time, but also inexplicably moved. And I think the reason for that is that Silence of the Lambs works on a mythic level that's almost perfectly. It's not the story just of horrible killers and the girl who gets them. It's a story of a woman's search for herself along a classic path, which is to say someone who's young and needs to find the truth, the inner truth and the outer truth, and needs to do so by going on a quest. The quest is to slay the dragon, in this case a psychopathic killer. And always on these quests that heroes and heroines take, you have to come upon a mentor, and the mentor is dangerous and seductive, and the mentor can destroy you or seduce you and give you information and make you stronger. And, of course, that's the Anthony Hopkins character, Hannibal Lecter. And this search for self, the search for knowledge that threads its way through the Silence of the Lambs makes it incredibly poignant, I think, and gives it a lasting resonance that at least the New York film critics remembered when they announced that it was their choice for the best film of the year.
Now, Paris is Burning is on your 10 best list. Describe what this movie's about. It's a documentary.
This is a terrific, also strangely moving documentary about houses, they're called, in Harlem, of transvestites who dress up, who are so much the underclass in this society that they're not just dressing up, they're not just men dressing up as women, but sometimes they're men dressing up as men. But instead of dressing up, they're dressing up as ordinary men. They find themselves so outside of the world that they see that to pass for instance, a businessman is a triumph to them. And they have parties and contests and all sorts of things that you watch in this movie. And it's an overwhelming sort of cultural experience. It's amazing to see that right next door to you, this world of outsiders feels so outside that they develop this extremely rich and vibrant subculture to make up for it.
Let me point out that if we're talking about any movies that you've missed, chances are that they're already out on video or they'll be out on video in the near future. So if any of these films are films that didn't come to your local movie houses, don't forget your local video store if you want to see them. Now, a movie that either just opened or hasn't opened yet, depending on where you are, is Rush, and this is based on a memoir by Kim Wozencraft. I've only seen The Coming Attractions. It's on your 10 best list. Tell us something about the movie.
Well, I should tell you first that the director, Lily Zanuck, is a friend of mine. I should just say that to qualify my remarks. But I think she did a remarkable job. And this is her first film as a director. She was a producer with her husband, Dick Zanuck, of, among other things, Driving Miss Daisy. And she's taken this novel and made it into a very powerful movie that is absolutely no holds barred. There's not a moment of sentimentality. There's not a moment of compromise in it. And she gets powerful performances out of Jason Patrick, whom you may have thought of earlier as kind of just a pretty boy, but he brings to the movies a quality among young actors that I feel we really need and lack at the moment, with the likes of Kevin Costner dominating the scene. And that quality is danger. He really has a kind of movie star danger that I find wonderful to watch. There are great performances. There's an almost wordless performance that's absolutely powerful by Greg Allman in it as the villain. And Max Perlick, a wonderful actor whom you may remember from Drugstore Cowboy, gives one of the best supporting performances of the year in this movie.
What was his role in Drugstore Cowboy?
He was the guy who finally killed Matt Dillon.
Oh, okay. So I interrupted you.
Well, I just think it's a terrific job and a strong, maybe too harsh movie. I mean, it is about the drug subculture. You are watching people stick needles into their arms, and you're watching pretty scary things happen. People get blown away. It's set in the 70s in a kind of grungy, seedy world. It's not Hook, believe me, but I think we need antidotes to Hook, and this is one.
Okay, we should mention Europa, Europa.
I
ended up seeing this one twice for various reasons, and I really enjoyed it the second time around because it was so well edited that it's the kind of thing you don't see when you're watching the movie the first time.
No, that's right. It's a beautifully made movie from first to last, and I can't rate it too highly. Maybe it's the best movie of the year. I don't know. It's a marvel, and really, this is... In this year when truth was often stranger than fiction, the verity of the story, the fact that it was a true story, and that it's the story of the strange kind of survival of this man named Solomon Peril through World War II, a Jewish man, a Jewish boy who posed as a Nazi and got away with it. And when you see the real character it's based on in Israel at the end, there's an almost kind of there's a terrible beauty about it that just haunts you for weeks and months afterwards. This is not to say that the only powerful image in this film is the last one. It's got it from beginning to end.
Tell me what you think of my theory. I think that this year in movies was the year of the life force. Movies where somebody who's not very bright is a little naive but has this zest for life.
What do you think?
Brings the zest into other people's lives, and we're all better people by virtue of having seen the movie. In this category, I'd put like Laura Dern in Rambling Rose, Robin Williams in The Fisher King, yes, mm-hmm. Jodie Foster in Little Man Tate, where she's, you know, she's not as smart as everyone else, but she's got this zest for life. Gina Davis in Thelma
here.
And Louise.
Terribly afraid you have a good point here, if I detect an edge of disgust in your description, I share it. Also, that kind of rings with the redemption theme in these movies. I mean, another example, maybe the most egregious of what you're talking about, is Regarding Henry, where a bad man is turned into one of your life force characters by a bullet to the head. And of course, we could all be as wonderful as he was if we all just went out and got shot. I think this is an alarming trend, very 90s, I find, where kind of everyone is falling backwards, falling all over themselves backwards to be kind of dumb and good instead of hyper-sophisticated the way we felt we were in the 80s and now feel guilty about.
Huh. Do you think that there was a proportionately large share of bad films this year? How would you rate the year?
Yes, I did think there was a proportionately large share of bad films. In fact, as of sort of the summer... it seemed to me I'd seen three good movies out of zillions. And this is the plight that the film critic finds himself in now sort of universally, is that there are more movies being dumped on the film market for various reasons, not least of which is that you need to, in order to go to video, have it play somewhere. And often the place that it plays is New York City. And so we find ourselves being dragged to screenings of just terrible, terrible stuff. And I think in economic hard times, you always have a kind of play-it-safe mentality. The film business is, after all, a business. If there's a formula to be grabbed, they grab the formula. And so you get a lot of movies that are samey and are uninspired and that may begin to go somewhere but don't finally arrive there because it's too scary to go all the way. And yes, I mean, these are all the movies on my top dozen, shall we say, are small, kind of peculiar. It's almost as though they've escaped from the pack. Someone wasn't looking close enough, and they managed to get away with being good. But I found this year really disheartening in many respects.
So, Stephen, what are you doing New Year's Eve?
New Year's Eve, we're having friends over, and we're popping some corks.
Well, I hope you have a good time. And
same
I wish you a
you.
Very happy New Year.
Absolutely the same to you.
And I hope there's some good movies for us to see in 1992.
Oh, that's great. Yeah,
yeah,
absolutely.
Thanks for being with us, Stephen.
Sure, pleasure.
Stephen Schiff reviews movies for Fresh Air, and he's critic at large at Vanity Fair. This is Fresh Air.